B-Pod Studios.
Straightforward.
You lose too, big boy.
No holds barred.
I'm starting to think this guy's a con man.
Sports talk.
I got it. All right, I got it.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, Maz's theory, your theory. First of all, Maz was right to question that franchise number. Wouldn't you know it, Bedard did get it wrong. Huh?
It just felt a little low, that's all. Yeah, I mean, I'm splitting hairs here. You said the number was 23 and change, and I thought, well, you got guys making $30 million now, for crying out loud. It's got to be a little higher than that, and the number's really closer to 25. But either way, Greg's argument still holds water.
It's less than the 27.
Correct. It's less than the cap hit that the Patriots are incurring this season.
Yeah, that's on the books. Like, you don't have to project that number. He just used the 18 number, not the 19 number.
Yeah, he just mixed the years up. It happens. Okay. I've done it.
So it was 24.89, you said.
Correct.
Okay. So that's the real franchise number for this year. Still less than the 27.
Correct.
So his point was, again, the team, sources have told Boston Sports Journal, has not ruled out the possibility Brady could retire after this season, especially if he wins another Super Bowl. And if they worry about that, in which case the franchise tag does make sense, because if you sign him to an extension with a big guarantee well beyond that, you're on the hook for that money. Now, I'm not sure if you have to give it back if you retire or not, depending on how it's structured. Would the Patriots ask for money? I don't know. It just gets more complicated if you give him a contract extension and he retires. Anyway, they haven't done anything for this year. You look at the team and go, what the hell are they doing? But you look at next year, the books are clean. $85 million in cap space. They're accumulating draft picks. Their depth chart is wide open in a lot of places. Could they be setting themselves up for a reset after this season? That's sort of the question. What's your theory?
My theory is yes. Again, and look, I mean, I'm always open for a Patriot theory when you get into the offseason, because Belichick is such a closed book and seals the windows and everything else down there that you're always left to speculate. But when I sort of think out loud and I think of what things that you have said in the past, that Belichick resented Bill Parcells for leaving places on fire when he walked out the door.
Absolutely.
Right, Rome is burning, the emperor leaves. Here you go. The next guy cleans up the mess, which is usually what a subsequent coach is asked to do. And Belichick has said that, and again, I'm going by your sort of understanding of him, that he's not going to do it that way. I'm not going to leave the next guy holding the bag. I add that to the story that Bedard wrote, and I look at it and say, well, then it's up to the next guy to, I'm not going to saddle you with any baggage. You can keep whichever players you want to keep. And I would even add in, maybe McDaniels will have a hand in the quarterback in the draft, as we have speculated in the past, that if they're going to take a quarterback this offseason, whether it's a trade for Rosen or they're going to take one in the draft, that it'll be McDaniels' call on that a particular player. And then at the end of the year, Bill wipes his hands and says, here you go. It's all yours now. You got plenty of cap space. We've had a couple of drafts where we've taken a bunch of players. You got yourself a running back. You got yourself a left tackle, if you count the fat kid from Georgia as a left tackle. And you got a bunch more picks coming in to replace Gronk and whoever else. So you start from ground zero. Here you go. Makes sense to me. I mean, you don't have to sell me much to sell me a good theory.
Okay. I'm fine with it. You got to rip the Band-Aid off at some point. So I'm fine with everything except for this scenario that I thought Murray would be clued into, which is tanking in 2020for Trevor Lawrence.
That won't happen.
I have no interest in tanking.
Neither do the Crafts. They won't tank. I mean, they won't allow it.
And this ties into the whole thing I've asked you about. Do you want to sell out for one more for Brady, or do you want to set up the next thing?
No, sell out for Brady. Oh. I don't care about any of this future crap. That's why I zoned out. Like, blah, blah, blah. Like, just do it for now. Find a wide receiver. That's my concern for now. Who's the next tight end? I care about 2019.
I care about the next team.
Ugh.
I care about the next team. Because life goes on, Murray. You have to watch football in 2 years. Wake up every Sunday and watch the Patriots.
I care about the now, not the future.
And again, right now, their 2020 depth chart, Danny Etling, Damoon, what's his name?
Whatever.
Patterson.
Damoon Patterson, Braxton Berrios, Matt Lacoste. Those right now are your starting quarterbacks, receivers, and tight end in 2020. Those are the only guys under contract.
Etling to Patterson. Danny's shooting for Damoon.
Brady's still going to be here in 2020.
Okay, so, and I hope so too. The only thing I don't want is this sort of reset, tank,
They're not going to tank, Mike. That's out.
Like, can we please not do that?
They're not going to tank.
The plan should be, this should be the plan. Let me tell you and tell them what the plan has to be. Get the next, do the Garoppolo thing all over again. Do that all over again. You were right to do it. You jumped the gun on Brady. So did a lot of us. It's only natural you would think that a 37-year-old guy would be on the decline. It only makes sense. It was the right thing to do. Turns out, he turned it around, okay, and went nuts for 4 or 5 years and is still going nuts, and so who could have predicted that? Okay, certainly not me, and turns out not Bill, because Bill thought the slow decline had begun at 37 too. But do the exact same thing. Get the next guy in here, quarterback. I don't care what you do at any other place, any other position. You want to clear cap space, clear the depth chart, let Josh Pickett go to the draft. I don't care. Quarterback. The quarterback. I want it to be Bill's call, and I want the guy to work with Bill for a couple years before Bill leaves. And that's what I want. And that's what they should do.
What about 1 year?
And transition at least one. I'd like a couple, but I'll take one. 1 year on the bench, standing next to Belichick, and da-da-da-da-da, and that can be part of Belichick's legacy and going away present, like the anti-Parcells. He's not leaving you with Drew freaking Bledsoe, Dallas, or whatever. Yeah, Bill's going to leave you with the next Garoppolo, the next quarterback. Like, that's a great legacy. And if Bill doesn't want to stick around for the whole thing, fine. But he gets the next guy. He starts to groom the next guy. And then whatever you want to do with the other positions, go ahead. Do nose tackle on your own time, Bedard. I'm worried, and it starts with the quarterback. Let Bill make that call.
I mean, to me, again, the scenario that Bedard paints there in that column is, you know, makes all the sense in the world. That's what it feels like. It really, when you look at it, they're setting it up for the handoff.
Do you believe the team? So again, the team sources told Boston Sports Journal has not ruled out the possibility Brady could retire after this season, especially if he wins another Super Bowl. Do you think that's possible?
Sure.
See, I'm not going to allow it. Meaning, no, not possible. I'm not going to let Brady carry on like this and playing to 45, maybe 50. And then they trade the next guy and he's going to retire after the second. No. I told you, you owe at least three after the Garoppolo trade.
Okay, but if they believe that, then let's see what happens with the extension. Because the idea that they wouldn't extend him because they would incur a dead cap hit long term makes perfect sense. And you know what? Again, let's say your ownership and you're looking at the whole scenario saying, well, we're not going to do that. You know what? We'll wait it out. We'll take the $27 million cap hit in the 1 year. It'll limit our ability to work on the free agent market or whatever else. We'll have restrictions in terms of what we could add.
But
we'll still have Bill.
And with $85 million in space, the cap, that franchise tag isn't that onerous.
The next year.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I'm talking about the $27 million hit in 2019.
Oh, okay.
That they look at it and say, okay, so it affected us in free agency, right?
Yep.
We couldn't make moves that we wanted to make. We missed on a couple of guys as it was, but we were under some restriction this year. That's okay. We have Bill. That's why we have Bill.
Got it.
Because Bill can coach up guys and make us better than any other coach would make us. And then after that, Bill can leave. If Tom goes, we're not stuck with it. And hopefully we've drafted the next quarterback by then, and Bill has had a hand in bringing him along for a year before we hand the keys off. Like, it makes a lot of sense. Here's why it also makes sense. Belichick's always a year ahead of us. Always. We're sitting there going, what the hell are they doing? 2019, look at the holes on the roster. Bill's not thinking about 2019. Bill's thinking about 2020. Bill's a step ahead, as always. And again, that's your Belichick conspiracy theory that Bill can make no mistakes because he's Bill and he's not capable of them. But given his history, I think there's a lot in there that could be dead on.
Okay, if you haven't read it, read Bedard in Boston Sports Journal. If you don't subscribe, subscribe. The story alone's worth it. Some fodder there. Fodder. Your thoughts on it right after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Cap space can be maneuvered, as we all know, in a number of different ways. So,
Well, that is true, too, Bill. Okay, the Patriots thoughts mixed in with our Bruins and Red Sox stuff so far. People want to even weigh in on the Celtics tonight in Miami. We'll take it all. Okay? James in the car, though, on the Patriots. Go ahead, James.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
This Patriots reset makes me think that it might be more about Bill in that it's his opportunity to reset and answer the question, was it Bill or was it Tom?
So explain that further, just quickly.
Yeah, you know, the debate everyone has is, was the Patriots success because of Tom?
No, I understand it, but their team building, how does that play into that?
Well, it's his chance to get the next quarterback where he had Jimmy in place, and that would have been, and as he said, it was seamless. He believed he could have won with Jimmy and then proved that it wasn't necessarily Tom. I think that reset coming up, because it also is money for free agency where he can get established, proven players as well, just go through the draft.
James, I think he'd like to win with another quarterback and prove that it wasn't just Brady. I don't think it's his prime motivation. I think it's somewhere on the list. It would have to be. It's human nature, right? It was just a chance to prove you can do it with someone else. It's a challenge. So I don't think that's his driving motivation, but I think it's somewhere on the list. The number one thing on the list should be is the current guy's 42. You need another quarterback. That's the point. Not Bill's legacy.
Yeah, no. Listen, I think, you know, I also think that the idea of leaving the Patriots in ruins is a very, and I'm going based on what you've said.
Well, again, as usual, you put too much stock into it. It's just a, I know Bill didn't like the way Parcells handled it.
Okay, and that's important, though.
And if I had to guess, that Bill would want to do it differently and not want to follow that suit where Rome is built, right? Rome is burning. He leaves the thing and there's nothing set up for the future, and he spent too much at the end because Parcells always did that, too. That's one of the reasons it fell apart with the Crafts. Crafts, you know, felt you're year to year and spending like an idiot, and you're going to be gone in a year or two, and we're going to be left holding the bag. Well, if you look at this, it's totally the opposite. You know, if this is Bill's last year, I'm just saying, there's no money on the books going forward. It's completely a clean slate.
Yeah, I just think that to me is important, that he felt a certain way when someone did it to him. And the other thing is, I'm not telling you the legacy is an important thing to him either, because, you know, in terms of winning with the other QB, I think that horse has left the barn. Okay, but I do think, like, as the caller was talking, and I said, well, wait a minute. Let's say Bill does what you want, which is draft the next QB and then develops him for a year, and he hands it off to Josh. And then the Patriots are good. Wouldn't that be quite a statement for Bill Belichick that he picked the quarterback before he left?
Yes.
And he handed him off to his protege.
Yes.
And they won.
Yes.
I mean, especially when you consider his tree and the fact that every guy that's ever coached under him that went on to become a head coach has pretty much crapped the bed. Like, really, they've all pretty much sucked to the point where Bill O'Brien looks like Vince Lombardi compared to the rest of them, for crying out loud. So that would be a pretty nice little thing to put on top of his career.
David in Maine has a thought. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, I'd like to say that I think I agree with you, Felga, and I believe that it's more of a thank you to the franchise for allowing him to be the coach, showing what he could do. And he's going to basically leave a clean slate for everybody. I do believe that that's the way it's going to go. I'll shut up and listen.
Okay. I mean, it's just, it's certainly a better way to do it than to leave the place a ton of bad contracts and, you know, cap jail, like that sort of thing, which I don't even necessarily believe in. But sort of setting up a clean slate for the next guy is certainly different than a lot of guys leave a place.
Yeah, I shake my head because I don't think it's about thank you to the franchise.
Right.
I think it's about doing the right thing.
Exactly. And, you know, so Bill out the door, and it's all part of his story. On his way out the door, he left the team with totally clean books, a clean slate for the next coach, and I'm going to add to the list, hopefully, the next quarterback. And that's, you know, that should be the legacy, and that's what he should be leaving the team.
I mean, I will say the majority of the time in his career, and not always, as we learned in the Malcolm Butler situation, but that whole mantra that he lives by of what's best for the team, I think to a large degree he tries to adhere to that. Like, to the point where he's downright cold at times and surgical. But to me it's about, what's the right thing to do for the Patriots after I leave?
Again, if you just joined us, Bedard wrote on Boston Sports Journal, looking at next year's cap and next year's roster, 2020. They have $85 million in space and holes all over the roster.
And so he asked people across the league about it. Here's one AFC executive, quote, "I've been staring at it for a while and I don't have a good beat on it. On one hand, they might just re-up a bunch of these guys for another go-round, and that would eat up most of it," meaning the space. "But on the other hand, if you were going to do a franchise reset, they've set themselves up to do that," end quote. Said an NFC executive, "Well, if you were Belichick and wanted to walk away by setting everything up for the next guy, whether that's McDaniels or someone else, this would be the way to do it. You can handpick your quarterback, you can have a ton of cap space, draft picks, and little dead weight. It's a clean break." So that's sort of what we're discussing. What's up with that? Phil and Rivera, go ahead, Phil.
And what's up, guys? What we're talking about, like, just talking about Belichick setting up for the future. He had a set up for the future with Garoppolo. He didn't take the phone call from the Brown. You could have Mayfield sitting on the bench for Brady until he retired. And look what they did last year. They sucked all last year. They go to the playoffs and they just turned. They just ripped every team apart on the way in. They can do that again this year, and it wouldn't surprise me. But as far as Belichick caring about what's going on for the future, I don't think he cares in the least bit what goes on in the future.
Well, let's see. Parcells never did. That's true. Parcells never did. But I'm telling you, this is what Mass keeps referring to, and this is just a guess, a projection on my part. But I do know that Bill resented some of the things that Parcells did and the way he carried himself. And I think that's one of the things, because I know the Crafts resented it. It's one of the reasons Parcells got blown out of here, is that, and he quit, but you know what I'm saying. It didn't work. Because Parcells was always for the now, for the now, for the now, and the Crafts said, "We're going to own this thing for decades. And when you're gone, we're going to be left with your contracts and your roster, and we've got to build for the long term, and you're just worried about this year or next year, and then you're gone." And Belichick was around for that. But if you want to go back into it, Maz, just to feed into this, in 96... The whole reason Kraft knows about Belichick is that in 96, Belichick came back. Remember the Super Bowl year? Al Groh was the defensive coordinator. Belichick coached the secondary, I think. And that's when he got to know Kraft. Belichick and Kraft forged a relationship in 96. And that's when Parcells, you know, went scorched earth and tossed over the draft table and wanted to do it his way and spend money. And the Kraft said, "No, we're in for the long haul." And that's when Belichick got his ear. So the whole reason Kraft likes Belichick in the first place and got to know him in the first place is because he was sort of his confidant when Parcells was blowing the thing up. And so is Belichick leaving in the exact opposite fashion? Clean books, everything about the future, total reset.
I mean, that would be like him, wouldn't it?
So I'm fine with all of that. You want to reset strong safety, Bedard? You want to reset the will and reset the right guard? Reset it all day long. Don't reset at quarterback. Have Bill start the transition at quarterback. That's my. I feel strongly about that.
Well, let's see what happens in this draft.
And all these Patriots fans that want to load up for 7 versus what's going to happen 5 years from now, I don't get you. We're going to have Sundays. There's going to be football. There's going to be sports. Wait, we all got something to watch and talk about. You want it to be freaking, you know.
Yeah, man, I want it
you
now.
You do.
Yeah.
You do.
Yep. I couldn't give a rat's ass about 5 years from now. I really don't. It's about now. More greed. More titles. Let me at that buffet again.
Without giving the answer, you know how long our agreement is with the Patriots, between Beasley and the Patriots, right? For play-by-play, don't answer.
Yeah I do. It's
long.
Yeah.
It's a long deal.
Yeah, and like that, like every other aspect of my life, when it comes to the future, I'll figure it out then. Whatever. I worry about tomorrow, like right now, like tomorrow's tomorrow, not 5 years from tomorrow.
Oh, my God. 3 years.
Ugh.
I'm petrified.
What happened to burn that bridge when we get to it?
No, we're here. We're here. I'm not going to throw crap at the wall at the quarterback position when Brady, and then you're the Miami Dolphins. And 25 years later, you're still wondering what the hell's going on there. You're the Buffalo Bills after Jim Kelly. You're a million other teams.
In fact, I would go so far as to say that if Bill doesn't pick the next quarterback, like, given what his priorities may be, maybe, don't jump down my throat. Like, heaven forbid I mentioned that in the past.
Well, no,
you say that Bill Parcells left him in ruin and built in like that.
You know him better than I do. Like, you know.
You do.
I don't.
What is wrong with that statement? Yes, you do.
I don't.
You knew him at one time better than I did.
I don't.
Yes, you do.
But anyway.
So anyway, that aside, I don't understand why you're so resistant to admit that.
It's silly. I don't know him.
But I would tell you that, like, Theo Epstein, I know him better than you do.
You do.
I don't know him well.
But you talk to people.
Okay, you didn't talk to Bill when he was the coach?
Not in a decade. I haven't talked to the man in a decade.
I haven't talked to Theo in years. I still know him better than you do.
Bull crap. But anyway, go ahead.
I haven't. It's been, well, maybe months.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, but I'm telling you, it's been a long time.
You actually talk to people and keep relationships. I have none.
Okay, but even still, you know him better than I do.
Anyway.
So, but all, if all of this is true, that he doesn't want to leave the Patriots in ruin because he finds that distasteful from when Parcells did it or from anyone did it, because he thinks this is the wrong way to act, which honestly, I find noble. Like, that type of quality, good.
You bet.
Like, to me, not enough people act that way. But that's aside. If that's true, well, then help them find the next quarterback before you go.
Thank you. Exactly.
Like, Bill should want to do that. So let's see what happens in this draft. If Bill doesn't do that, I would say, so wait a minute. Unless he's so resentful about the Garoppolo thing that he says, well, I found him for you. You didn't want him, so go pound sand. Like, then I sort of look at it. But even then, I would say, well, that's spiteful. That's not the right thing to do.
And now I have spiteful reasons to actually really root for this draft. Now it's now settled in stone. I want nothing but like D linemen, linebackers, another punter. Why not? Anything but a quarterback.
I wanted the quarterback. I wanted the quarterback last year.
No.
That would be, you know, there were
no quarterbacks.
It felt like there were a bunch of quarterbacks there, and they took Eddie Etling in the seventh round.
See if they can bring another one that's made out of glass that can't last two games.
I don't need a draft pick. Draft picks kind of scare me.
Or Rosen, whatever.
Yeah, I like the idea of trading for a Rosen. Waiting for Russell Wilson if he becomes a free agent, start getting in his ear. I'd do that. I'd play that game. I'm petrified of Jay Fiedler at quarterback after Dan Marino retires, and 25 years later, you still are sitting there with your putt in your hands. Like, you can't have that.
Rosen's not going to happen until draft night if it happens, but it's going to be on draft night.
Can't have it. All right, here's an update, then we're back with more.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back to your phones. We'll be circling back to the Bruins and the Red Sox. You want to weigh in on those things or the Celts tonight? I say call my board on that as well. Couple open lines at 617-779-0985. In fact, Corey in the car on the Celts tonight. What do you think, Corey? Corey? Okay, not there. Celts game tonight. You want a thought on that?
Yeah, look, again, this one's on the road. I mean, I'd like to see them play well here the rest of this week, whether it's tonight, Indiana on Friday, or both. And I guess technically this game doesn't have really as much value to them, right? Because they can lose tonight and win Friday and still be the four seed. I think if that's right, maybe I'm getting that wrong, but ideally,
I think you're right.
I would love to see them. So, you know, I would like to see them take control of the situation and close it out.
Those two home games against Indiana and Miami did nothing for me. Nothing. All they did was prevent me from saying the season's over. So those, I was not impressed.
Yeah, there's no big turnaround or anything like that. And if you think that you got something like that out of those games, you're delusional.
I don't feel that way. Now they go and back-to-back, beat both those teams on the road. Now I think you're building a little something, even if you win ugly. Like those home wins that are sort of ugly or scratchy against those horrible teams, like, no, you should be much better than those. Those wins didn't do anything for me.
I just feel like the whole season has been one step up, two steps back. The whole year has been like that. So now they got a couple of wins, and again, I wasn't all that impressed by the Indiana game either. But now if they go out and lose tonight, even if they end up as the number four seed, but I don't want to say they back into it, but they go into it doing the same thing that they've been doing all year, win one, lose two, win two, lose one, win three, lose one. Like, I don't feel good. I'd like to see them play well the final week. Okay, just make me feel a little better.
Ted and Kingston on the Bees last night. Hi, Ted.
Hey, Mikey, I think last night might have been a turning point for the Bruins in terms of Heinen. I think this kid Kuhlman's much better fit for this team. He's got more grit, and he goes to the net better than Heinen does. So I think the writing's on the wall for him.
Okay. I mean, why can't you have them both? They're both young and cheap. Kuhlman on the right side of David Krejci. I'd feel much better if Pastrnak were there. If we're there, I really do. I don't want to keep dumping on Kuhlman. I don't mean to dump on him. He might be a nice player. He's just... Is he ready to go? 4 times 7?
and grind it out every other night in the postseason against some of these teams? He just got out of college.
I mean, I can't imagine that he is.
I mean, maybe he is. I don't mean to doubt that. I'm just saying, I feel, look, as much as we talk about Marchand, and he's an important story, and we'll get back to him, a bigger development to me this year is Krejci, the return of Krejci. He's having arguably his best season. He set a season high in assists last night. If with three more points total, he'll set a season high in points. And he's on pace to play all 82 if he plays the last two. That's the best he's ever been. So you got him. And when you've had deep postseason runs, he's been the key. He's been the key guy. So can you give him something a little more established than Carson Coleman? That's all. Coleman's been good. Been fine.
I mean, I have felt like Krejci's been one of the key guys all year for them, really. Along, you know, and having a healthy McAvoy's made a difference, too. And you want to throw the progression of Carlo on the list, that's another big one. But to me, like, Heinen had one good stretch all year. One. It was when he was with Bergeron and Marchand.
So put him there.
Like, I like the idea of waves. Okay, I like that better than just one loaded up line. And the other thing is, when you end up in the power play, and I know maybe there are a few penalties in the postseason, like, I don't know what the actual math is on that, but it feels that way. Well, it's going to be Pasternak, Bergeron, and Marchand on the power play anyway.
You bet.
And if you're down a goal late in the game, then flip them. But I like the idea of waves. Make the other team look at you and go, well, that line could score, and that line could score. And now the third line, you know, they're a little bit better. Like, to me, that's how you win.
More Bruins thoughts coming up here in a second. Matt in the car on Belichick. Hi, Matt.
Hey, so I had two questions real quickly. One is, do you think that Brady's success has been cumulative because of the system or because of his ability to adapt and learn the plays?
Both.
And then the second one was, is Belichick's time, or are you insinuating that his time is on a year-to-year basis and he has no contract?
Okay, so, yeah, it's hard to predict. You know, when Josh McDaniels jumped off that plane to Indy, I thought Bill was done after this year. I mean, at the time, right? If you dial it back a whole year, I think we both felt this was Bill's last year and that McDaniels thing was the tip-off. But he's still here. So, like, I'm sick of trying to predict it. It's You can't. The way the roster and the books are set up, though, again, as those NFL executives talked about when they looked at the Patriots' books and their roster, it is set up for a reset or a clean break, if you will, after this season. So read into that what you will.
I mean, again, and the other part that Bedard didn't really touch on, or maybe he did and I don't remember if you went over it, but the coaching staff, how many guys left? Like, there's that, too. Like, the whole thing feels like a team in transition. It just does. You got a bunch of coaches that left, you know, players that they didn't get, or, you know, the whole roster feels like it's in a state of flux. Gronk walked. They haven't done Brady's contract yet. The whole thing feels like one giant transition. That's what it feels like.
And that's fine. Transition the whole thing. Don't screw around with the quarterback. Don't screw around with that position. Get the next guy. Cam's in Taunton. He's been waiting for quite a while to talk about something I have no interest in, but go ahead, Cam.
Just, you know, the low point in sports fans, again, happened at Dodger Stadium last week. It's like, why is this? I mean, first of all, the Dodgers are accountable for this. This is the same stadium, same area, where that incident happened 8 years ago that left the guy with permanent brain damage. And they don't put cameras in where this happens. Like, what are we doing, people? Why does sports have to come to this, to violence? This guy's a father of four, and he's on life support. Like, this is deplorable. I hope this guy's wife takes the Dodgers for everything, because this is on them as much as it is anybody else.
Okay, Cam, it's a horrible story, and I don't know it. So you want to tell people what he's talking about?
So I just know the generalities of it, that a fan punched another fan in the face and hurt him severely. So, but again, the history at Dodger Stadium, and this wasn't during a Giants series. But there's a couple of incidents now there that have happened over the years. The last one was a Dodgers-Giants series. And so, you know, I don't know what to tell you. Who likes this stuff? Who likes the violence in the stands? Like, nobody likes it. But I also don't think this is something that's exclusive to the sports world. You know, I mean, we don't need to get into, like, much depth. It's not like the only violence in the world is happening at sporting events.
Our long commercial-free segment comes your way next. There'll be no commercial interruption for just over 20 minutes. A great time to jump aboard at 617-779-0985. We'll get back to the Bruins, how you should feel about them after that win last night in Carolina, and Marchmont. Who would have thunk it with this kid? We'll talk about it after these words.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey, it's Felger.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
3 seconds remaining in this one. Coyle in the right corner, and the horn is going to sound here at Nationwide Arena. The Bruins' magic number to clinch home ice in the first round is down to one. They snap a brief two-game skid, and they're going to head to Minnesota for their final road game of the regular season after banking a 6-2 victory over the Blue Jackets here in Ohio.
And the home ice was clinched shortly after. Toronto loses last night, so it's all set. Bruins-Toronto game one probably a week from tomorrow at the Garden. It will be at the Garden for sure. You look at the Garden calendar, it's a week from tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's been confirmed. The rest of the schedule won't be out until the regular
season. Oh, they've actually confirmed the date.
Yeah, it's Thursday night. Like, that's been known.
I think there's a... Is Cher here on Wednesday? Like, there's something at the Garden on Wednesday.
Let me look.
So, I think it's...
It'll probably be Thursday, Saturday. I mean, hockey night in Canada.
You can almost guarantee it. And I think, the following week, I'd look at Saturday, too. You got Toronto. That's huge for Canada. They're on Hockey Night in Canada Saturday night, so games 2 and 5 will be Saturday night.
I mean, that's a good Hockey Night in Canada game. Bruins, Leafs, two original six teams in the playoffs.
Same as it was last year.
Awesome.
Coming off of last night, the win in Columbus, you should feel good about your team.
Excellent.
You should feel good. You want to go first?
Sure. I mean, look, under the circumstances, they hadn't played great of late. They're going in there. Columbus is red hot, and the Bruins absolutely spanked them. Spanked them. Like, and locked everything up again. I love the idea of just, shutting the door and now just gearing up for the playoffs. Completely clear and all across the board. You got Marchand getting his 100th point. DeBrusque had two more goals. You know, he's got 27 goals. Mm. DeBrusque, 27 goals. Like, it was an impressive win. I mean, it went from 2-0 to 4-0 in the blink of an eye to the point where, like, I walked away from the TV for a couple of minutes, came back and was 4-0. And I went, wow. Like, I just did not see that win that convincing coming.
No, me either, especially with the way Rask has played lately. And that was maybe the most encouraging thing from last night. There was a lot to be happy about. But Rask, considering how he looked the last few games, to see him look like that against a pretty good team here that's still trying to squeak into the playoffs, and they're tied with Montreal, right?
For that. Columbus has a tiebreaker there in the 8th spot right
now. So it's not like they were playing some lamb that's just playing out the string, right? You know, Columbus has things to play for here. So for the way that Rask played last night, very encouraging going to the playoffs.
Columbus is the hottest team in the league. I think they'd won 5 straight. Would they outscore opponents the last 5 minutes?
Something like 24-4.
Bobrovsky was the hottest goalie in the league.
Yeah, 3 shutouts in this last 5.
And you chased him. You chased him. He wasn't even that bad. And you chased him. So that was emphatic. That was, you should feel good about that. Because that's your team. They're pretty much all back. The only piece missing was Heinen. And you got to figure out just a little roster thing. I mean, does Kuhlman stay with Krejci? And does Heinen go down with Coyle and Johansson? And is Coyle and Johansson going to be a thing now? They scored. So there's just one little lineup shoe to drop. But otherwise, and Corrali has to come back in the second round. But, other than that's your team. And they had sort of scuffled along, and Toronto was nipping at their heels a little bit. And you go into a building for a team that's fighting for the last playoff spot, that was the hottest team in the league with the hottest goalie in the league, and you spanked them. You should feel good about that. And the best things, and I said before, 3 of the 6 goals were kind of scratchy. The first one was just a joke. And even the second or the third goal with Marchand, the defenseman just handed it to him on a platter. But you were all over him. I mean, you after the first, I don't know, half of the first period or so, you controlled the play. You were all over. You deserve to win that game. You deserve the lucky goals, in other words, I guess I'd put it that way. So, but the best things to feel good about to me are the secondary scoring and the goaltending. Because those are the questions. We know Marchand, Bergeron, and Pastrnak. We get it. We know it. Like that, that doesn't prove anything to me. When Johansson scoring from Coyle, it was a rebound of a Coyle shot, but when that line scores, okay. When Krejci and DeBrusque and Kuhlman,
Again, I'm not sure if Kuhlman stays there, but when that line scores, is there scoring? And Rask keeps you in it and legitimately comes up with those big saves to keep it a game when you need it? Now we're talking. That's what's going to win it for him. If they go deep, that's what's going to – we know what the first line's going to do. It's all those other things. And you got that last night. So you should feel good about it. The other big item is Brad Marchand, 100 points.
It's amazing, isn't it?
People realize what a – you know, what this player has become, what an elite offensive player has become, and what 100 points means in the league.
Only five guys in the league have 100 this year.
Which is high. Usually it's only one or two. Maz, these are the guys in the last 5 years. These are the guys in the last 5 years who've gotten 100 points. Malkin, Crosby, Kane, McDavid, Giroux, Kucherov, and McDavid did it twice. We were talking...
the best of the best.
Malkin, Crosby, Kane, McDavid. We were talking like... we're talking the elite of the elite. That's a hard number to get in this day and age in the NHL. It doesn't come around very often. Although this year it's back up. Scoring's back up. There's five guys, you said. Five guys. But Marchand's on it. And I think you made a great point before. And there was this debate over the years about Marchand's style of play with all the suspensions and all the crap and all the dirty play and all this crap that's in his game. You know, you would call him out for it. We would call him out for it. Others would call him out for it. And fans would say, well, he's got to play that way. He's got to have his edge or else he's not the same guy. And as you rightly pointed out earlier, Maz, you say it again.
Yeah, this is proof that he doesn't need to be that dirty player to be able to produce. In fact, it really argues the opposite. That when he takes the junk out of his game, and not all of it, he didn't take it all out. There's still a stupid penalty here and there, and there was one last week. But when you take out the trying to hurt other people and the slew footing and the, you know, elbows to the head and everything else, he's had his best year of his career. I mean, is that a coincidence? Like, I know this. If I were Sweeney or Cassidy, I would go to him and say, see, you can do it this way. In fact, you're a better player this way. Nobody's talking anything negative about you now. To me, when they brought him up, I thought this guy was a 20 goal a year third line player. That's what I thought he was. He is a freaking force. I never, ever imagined that Marchand would be this good. Ever.
An elite offensive player. I also give Cassidy some credit for this as well, because I think he's turned that Bergeron line into a true offensive line. Where with Claude, it was really more, he was really sure to get him in the defensive zone and defensive situations, and there's still a great two-way line, but Cassidy's opened them up offensively. Has totally opened up that line offensively. And I think Bergeron has benefited offensively as well. His numbers have gone up. But Marchand's the real one. And 100 points, it almost never happens on this freaking team. I don't know if you've heard that, you know, the stats have been around, but the last guy to do it was Joe Thornton. 16 years in 2003. So it's been 16 years since someone has done this. There's been only three guys in the last 25 years. The last guy before Thornton, again, Thornton had 101 in 2003. Oates, Adam Oates, in 1993-94 had 112 points. So it's been three guys in 25 years.
Oates used to just sit there and feed Neely.
Oates, and I looked this up again. Yes, I just started playing around with the Bruins' leading scores. Marchand's been your leading scorer. This will be his fourth time being your leading scorer. So this is no just pure punk rat. Like, this is, again, elite offensive guy.
No, and 3 years in a row.
3 years in a row.
85, 85, 100.
Yep.
And he's scoring basically 35 goals every year.
So when you look at some of the scoring on this team over the years, like in 2011, when they won the cup, who led them in scoring in 2011? Trivia time, Bruins.
I mean, I know the answer to that.
Okay, it's two guys.
Krejci.
Guess who he was tied with 62 points. So they're leading.
Oh, regular season, yeah.
Yeah, so the regular season, their scoring leader was David Krejci with 62 points in 2010-2011. He was tied with Milan Lucic with 62 points. Your leading scorer the year you won the cup was that hack. And I say that with love in my heart. But he was a plumber, as I call him affectionately. Milan Lucic led you in scoring.
Five goals into an empty net that year.
That's because he played with Krejci.
The year before, in 2009-2010, your leading scorer was tied. Krejci and Bergeron tied with 52 points. And again, Marchand has 100 in leading you in scoring this year. So it's like, you know, the Claude years versus these years.
Right, roll the four.
Krejci and Bergeron tied for the team lead with 52 effing points.
Yeah, that might be the biggest factor, though, the grinded out Claude years. Like,
all right, Bruins fans, who led him in scoring the 3 years before Krejci and Bergeron in 2009-2010? Think about it. Quickly.
Savard.
Excellent, Maz. Did you look at this list?
No.
Very good. Mark Savard.
Well, he was here with Chara, right? That was the rebuild.
Mark Savard had some good offensive years. From 07 to 09, led him with 88, 78, 96 points, respectively. Bergeron led in 06. Then you got into some Thornton years. How about this one? 01, 02. Who led the team with 70 points in scoring?
Oh, God. I'm like, I don't know. That's pre-Thornton now?
Concurrent to
what
Thornton.
What about like Allison?
Good guess,
Sergei Murray?
Sergei Samsonov.
Oh, okay.
Sergei Samsonov led him with 70 points. See, this is fun, Bruins fans, right? Now, Maz just spoiled it, because I was going to tell you, who led the team in scoring for 3 out of 4 years? 3 out of 4 years!
Jason Allison.
From 98 to 01. I never thought in a million years you'd get that. And then I'd have to describe him to you. Some center who had nice skill but was basically as slow as I am.
My intelligence is subtle.
Remember Jason Allison, that big oaf?
Hell yeah.
Oh, God, he could not move. He had nice hands, though. Guess who led him in scoring between Oates and Allison, 96-97?
I'm going to guess Bork.
Nope. Stumpy.
Stumple?
Joseph Stumple led him with 76 points. Oates led him. And then Oates led him 3 straight years. Does this bore you? I love this. You know Bork led him in scoring 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years?
See, that wasn't a bad guess.
He led him in scoring 5 years from the defense, from the blue line.
It's another good guess by me.
In 90-91, he had 94 points in 76 games. 94. He sniffed 100 points.
Well, how many assists did he have? Remember, he had 80 assists for crying out loud.
Won the Norris that year.
Ridiculous.
Won the Norris that year. He had 95 points in 86-87. Won the Norris that year. He was pretty good. Okay. Okay. Huge points. And I promise I'll stop. But I could do this all day. I promise I'll stop.
What year?
85-86. Okay, here's how the scoring went. Middleton led in 79, 80, 81, 82. He and Peterson split it in 84. Bork won it in 85. Then this individual won it in 86. And then Bork and Neely took over for the next 4 or 5 years. Who led him in scoring in 85-86? I will eat my hat if you get this one.
Barry Peterson?
Nope. I told you Peterson and Middleton split in 83-84.
Hold on. 85-86. Who led the Bruins in scoring?
Keith Crowder. You never would have gotten it.
Oh, no, I wouldn't have gotten
that. Keith Crowder, 84 points out of nowhere.
You pronounce his name wrong. It's Crowder.
Crowder. I could do this all day long. But 100-point guys, they don't grow on trees. Even when they used to score, even when the league could score, the Bruins didn't have 100-point guys. Unless you want to go the early 70s. Bobby Orr, 135 points in 1975. How about 74? In 74, they had 3 guys. Espo with 145. Orr with 122. Yikes.
One of those years, Bobby Orr's plus minus was 104. Think of that. Plus 104. Oh, talk about shaking your ass in the rest of the league.
But guess who's on this list with all these guys? Marchmont. Marchand. The little puke can play. The little puke's good offensively.
He's awesome. I mean, really, again, like all the way around, too. Shorthanded, power play. He leads the team in even strength goals. He's a relentless forechecker. He's good in his everything. I mean, really. If he can permanently clean up the stupidity, the elbows and the slew footing and the, you know, submarining guys, low bridging them, the whole 9 yards. Like, there's nothing to bitch about with him. Not really.
Murray's update, 90 seconds, no commercials. We'll reset the Red Sox as well. Maybe do some Red Sox trivia. What do you think, Murray?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.